Thank you, everybody, for coming to this important meeting. We have invited everybody as a new way of dealing with the issues of strategic planning as well as dealing with annual reports. We were together when we were dealing with the strategic plan. So, if we were together to mean that, we think that then we should also be together when we look at our annual report and that as a trend. Because when we were dealing with the strategic plan as a collective, we also wanted to assess whether the threat plan are talking to each other of different offices. There is one a complementary role that is played by all the entities to each other. The second issue was that we wanted to assess whether there is also image between the strategic plan of the department and the direction that the department was taking, and how the strategic plan of the transport entity then relates to the strategic plan of the department. We also wanted to enhance a common understanding of how, as public representatives, measure the relevance of the strategic plan to what the country needs to change. And we wanted to make that familiar to the Department of Transport as well as transport agencies, that there are certain documents that we use to actually measure whether we are moving towards the direction. Taken by the ruling party, because we cannot run away from the fact that there is a ruling party in this country. And the ruling party wins elections because all parties get an opportunity of presenting to the voters what each party would do if people were to vote for that party. That process happens during the election campaign, where parties develop election manifestos. And in those election manifestos, they actually state what they would deliver, why people should vote for them, and what it is that they would deliver when they win the election. After the election, the party that has been voted in is expected to deliver on what it promised the voters to give to them. and in terms of transport, the department then has a responsibility of looking at what was promised by the party that won the election and develop our programs that are speaking to that. We're not asking anyone to be a member of any political party, but we are saying a party that wins elections is given a mandate to deliver on the manifesto that is presented to the voters. And then the government department has an obligation of developing programs that are speaking to that, which was promised, as well as the agencies. And in our case, we look at how relevant is the strategy of the department to what was promised by the party that won the election, which becomes the government. We also look at how relevant are the strategic plans of the transport agency to the strategic plans of the department. That's what we do when we look at the strategic plan. When we are looking then at the annual report, we are looking at what is it that is in the strategic plan that has been achieved. And on issues of leadership, financial management, governance, we depend more on the Auditor General report and comment. On issues of value for money, we depend on the change that the ruling party wants to effect in the country to see whether that money was able to add value in terms of social development and economic development in the country. So we don't just look at whether the money was underspent or overspent, or whether the money was spent in the program, which is good. We also look at whether the program did bring any change in terms of social development and economic development, because all governments are there to improve the lives of the people. So I know that it is important for us to make this point very, very clear, so that we are then able to respond and comment having that understanding. Why that is important to us to match the value for money? It is because we also have a responsibility now. We are having the responsibility of redirecting the budget as public representatives. We don't only rely on each department and the entities to decide on how the money is going to be used and what programs are going to be implemented. We also take what we see through our constituency work and the questions that come to us through our engagement with the community, and then look at how relevant the programs that have been developed are to what comes from the constituencies and the communities that we represent. Because we are here, Tina, as members of parliament, representing our communities. So we want to, this is an activist parliament, meaning that we always look at the impact and progress in terms of community development. So the service delivery at the end of the day has to ensure that development in the community is taking place, including the ability for communities to do things for themselves. In other words, programs of government do not only need to deliver services in terms of infrastructure to the community, they also need to deliver the community development and enable communities to do things for themselves. That's how we shall be looking at this annual report. We have had a session with the Office of the Auditor General. We are going to be using the information that we gathered through that engagement. We have also had a session with the department. We will be using that information. But we will also be reflecting on what you presented to us as a strategic plan. So I think it is going to be a very good meeting. And we have arranged the presentation is in this manner so that we don't have a high blood pressure and low blood pressure when we get in this report. So we have strategically put organizations so that we have days that are both these 2 days. We don't have 1 day that causes the high blood pressure and another day that causes the low blood pressure. Remember, and get very frustrated. We also don't want to be very excited in such a way that this is the Jablena Negapun. So, I guess it's the assessing family is their blood. A mother knows his children. So we know children that are doing well but need support, and we know those that are doing excellent work, and we try to structure our presentation in that way so that we don't have a day where people are lambasted. We don't want to do that. We want to have a situation where but we also think the value that can be added by having all entities under one roof is that we can cross-pollinate. So when we are discussing other entities, we are not only expecting members of the portfolio committee to raise issues. We are also expecting that members from other entities will also comment, because that will then enable us to find solutions. You may find what is the weakness of another entity is the strength of the other. That will then assist us to help each other. There's only one entity in Yekona, the RTMC. And we have excluded the RTMC because we understand our problems are. We want the minister to address us first, and then at the later point engage with the RTMC. All other entities are going to be part of this. So I don't think it is important for us to know from that. We are going to be very taking time, although we started late, but the time allocated for presentation is just that. If we are going to have one member of the portfolio committee to be in touch, and if then you hear something like it would be able to end your time there after this report, and you will choose from members of the portfolio committee a member that is very high conscious. And that's it for my responsibility. So, this responsibility is going to And then we also have, we are going to take all the presentations and then have the discussion of all the presentations as well after lunch. Because we think that by that time, we shall have enriched ourselves by getting a report to Lapa, Nangapa, so that Lava Ababa performs, Lava Tulu, and Mr. Colin, they mustn't find themselves against the world. Because our questions will only be directed to them. But we won't be having our questions that are directed to all the issues. If a member is given an opportunity, who's already our questions that say, this question is for this entity, and this question is for this entity, this question is for this entity. So that we don't isolate entities and have a session that looks shy about the session of normal band. We must have a session essence of feeling as a family. That's how I treat my children. Always about the noise about the human of the gun. Because the law always about it. I'm not feeling it with the end. The guy with his mom will be the life that you're young. Before the room called. And so that nobody puts it, my children that are doing well. Papa is doing things, the one who is not doing well. So when I call my children to praise them for what they have done, my own children, and those that have done wrong, for them to, for me to correct what they are doing wrong, I call all of them at once, so that they will be able, those that have wrong will be able to assist with the weak one, and also the weak one will get an opportunity of getting the support. So that is the approach. Thank you. We now we have put up first one. Also because of your friends and ladies first. And also the fact that we have seen some of the work, wonderful work that was provided by APRA in preparation for the 23rd. And I think that it is important for us to acknowledge that before we begin the staff. We visited all the provinces and we saw the work that was done by APRA, and we have not been have access with APRA after that. We would want to thank you for that. We put a very good report that to Parliament, that was APRA highlighting the contribution that transport needs in this country is preparing for the 2010. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the Transport Committee. I think over the years we've benefited a lot from your guidance. And thanks, Chair, for the good introductory words. I think one of the things that we'll probably notice today is how closely we work with as employees in the Transport Committee. So we appreciate that approach. We found several of you. The first slide of the slide, please, was just trying to contextualize the environment and that we do it from noting that as infrastructure companies, the things that we put in place take many, many years to complete. The journey to transform South African airports from the old, now small airports into modern infrastructure that we see specifically last day. The things that we are and the introduction slide is just to share with you that some of the focus that cut across the 4 years after the 2010 year, we focused a lot on successfully delivering the infrastructure on time and within our available resources, and also to enter the debt market where it was after steady in those years to start to borrow from the capital market. Because as you know, we are able to generate our own internal sources, but it was the time for us to go out there and get tested and get rated, and so that we can be able to source all of the funding that we require as a standalone entity, and we've managed to achieve that, especially when noting the context of a global recession, where the numbers in traffic were going down in that period. We had a deadline towards the World Cup. We had the capital market being quite constrained, and therefore the cost of capital being quite high. To have been able to still source our funding and still be able to compete and do our work at that time has been a very good way. One of the great lessons for us as well being that at the very same period when our economic regulation required that we fund all of our infrastructure, it requires all lending by everybody in the industry. On slide 4, we share with you the focus areas for this year, which were very particular because they are what the transport entities were all looking to achieve for South Africa and for our region. The first point was to make sure, against all odds, whether it was the Kinshasa Airport or it was in Cape Town, that all of our infrastructure, all of the preparation for our people, all of the systems of coordination were all ready for us to go into operation for the Soccer World Cup. That remains something that rallied all of us across the country, all 2,600 employees. And that achievement, I think, we have made in partnership with our sister companies in transport, in local authorities and provinces, and national government. Because we sunk about 17 billion rand of infrastructure, it is appropriate that the second bullet became also an important one. Because as you well know, I give an example to myself always that with infrastructure, because we think so much capital at a point in time, it's almost like what they say in the Bible, where you have 7 years of harvest and 7 years of poverty. But in our case, the 7 years of poverty, the years when you are sinking money into building capacity, so that on the back of it, you can start giving another 7 years of reward. Infrastructure is long term. It takes a lot of money, but when you look at it long term, you can start talking about the pattern and the nature of sustainability that you would like to achieve for your company. That remains our focus. Coming out of the investment period, we are also aware that the World Cup was the greatest opportunity to market our country, but that it was just an event in a long cycle of infrastructure development, that we had to already be thinking ahead about what is going to happen in 2015, we've got a 20-year business plan, a 10-year business plan, just to make sure that we can have an outlook long term. We obviously wanted also to ensure that the policymakers created a conducive environment for us to invest and operate by looking at our economic regulatory policy and approach, so that it supports our investments as long as we do them sustainably, and that it provides something very transparent and predictable for us. And obviously, we wanted to ensure that compared to our peers in the world, that we continue to provide for South Africans, for the African continent, airports that can compete very well against their peers in terms of operational efficiency. You will know that for us as airports, runways, the south, and we have no business. We always try to make sure that the efficiency that we can provide on the runways will keep you all moving. Baggage management systems, on transport. I'm very proud to say that slowly but surely, as an airport community between airlines, between ramp handlers, and security agencies, for the first time in many years, we are able to calm ourselves around on time departures, and we try to continue to improve on that because we are compared with our peers on that. The extent to which an airline can tell you that you departed 5 o'clock and then they leave at 5 o'clock, we will get there one day. We're so predictable for you that we make good improvements. It's important to also note that we remain a complex system. We've got to keep looking at how we can improve in business excellence and still, as the chair has said, deliver the larger goods to society. I'm pleased that we had targeted to reach level 4 in terms of the BBBE, and we have achieved level 3. And the amazing thing for me is, as we engage with the Department of Transport, airports create more activity for the economies that are around them. And oftentimes, in the way we measure and define BBE, you find that we cannot even share with you the extent to which around the airport we have actually created industrial zones, we have created spin-offs that are able to enhance and contribute to our society. And those things, while they do not fall under the definition of triple CEE, they are quite important to make sure that we still add much, much more to the economy that we are part of. Revenue efficiency, you will see as we present this result, that even as we pay for our debt, and we want to make sure that over the years that we continue to be a good company to borrow, this company continues year on year to continue to generate good revenue out of the business that we have. We always try to say that the utilization of the assets that you have given to us to manage on behalf of South Africans, we try to the extent possible as a team, not only to look at how we manage costs and how we grow our influence, but we look at how we get the value that can add back to the money we need to invest in capacity, but also when we give money back to our shareholders in government, we are able to continue to contribute to the livelihood of our society. Employee development in airport and aviation sector is key for us. And I'm very proud that over the years, we have created in Aspen some of the best and world-class airport managers of men and women that I believe that this country should be proud of. Oftentimes, airports are in the back room like any other company. We don't see at all. We don't fly our airport, we fly FAA, we fly dual comment. But behind the scenes are young Africans, are young South Africans, that as we sit here, they are managing and moving South Africa to excellence. And I think a good example has been how the young little girls and boys managed to close one airport and open another in 6 hours in New Zealand. And I think that sometimes we forget the journey that most of them were not born in families where they learned to fly. Some of them started to be an aircraft when they started to work for us as companies in South Africa. Today we rely on them and they are very, very good. And oftentimes we don't thank them. And I would hope that the committee that we thank all of the transport entities to remember behind them are young South Africans that are healthy and cutting South Africa in terms of transport infrastructure. Similarly, you'll see we compare well on slide 5. In terms of our customer service level, because we know very well that people's perceptions of Africa worldwide used to be very low, by looking at our quality of service standards, I know that we forget where we come from. I'm very proud to see that even an OWASP tumble has continued to slowly but surely come to the average globally. As you'll see in this slide, the global averages are sitting at 4, OWASP tumble 3.8, which is one of our most difficult places where customers would always have huge concerns. Today, to see that OWASP tumble can achieve this is quite a great thing. Cape Town is on the average, and this was taken during the completion of infrastructure. We also don't have a doubt that in the next couple of years they will retain a leading position among their peers in the world, and we look forward to them getting as number one again. Durban will outshine them. They will continue to show South Africa about what they can deliver, and I'm proud that we will continue on behalf of South Africa to make sure that when people arrive in our continent and they arrive at our airport, we try to give the people and the mindset and the attitude and the technology and the system that will try to the extent possible, not always perfectly, to showcase what we are all about as a people and as a continent. What is good about the way we approach our business is that alongside with that, we stick to our minds and sustainability. We keep our minds on generating value, and we keep our minds on trying to the extent possible to give you assets that you will be proud of and services that you will be proud of, so that when you challenge us, you can be guaranteed that we'll go back, we'll go and rethink, and we'll try and come back with standards that will satisfy you as our parliamentary committee. I'm going to hand over to the FE, but to share with you as she takes over that what you have in front of you is against all odds, we are continuing to grow. We are continuing to use the assets that we've given to our custodianship. We are creating value out of them. Yet in this few years, we used all of that money firstly to pay off debt. And you will see that the numbers of the FE 30% will show that. that we are continuing to focus on making sure we remain. It proves worthy investment rated agency, and that we continue to give performance all around it up to the customer. To you as our shareholders, it's in the public, and also to ensure that our people are continuing to grow.
As Wanda indicated, the previous financial year in March 2010 has been quite challenging. I think we all recall, but we went through the economic crisis, particularly in the domestic market, and actually contracted, decreased contracted by 1.8%. And similarly to that, we see that as a result of that, our traffic within our airport has actually gone down by 2%. But similarly, contrary to that, as we indicated, that despite all those economic environment that we found ourselves operating within, we continue to be resilient as a government and have people who continuously focus on how we can actually add value. And as a result of that, we increase our revenue by 5% to 3.5 billion. And following that, any for interest and tax, as well as amortization, also increased by 6% to 1.8 billion. And if you consider the fact that this increase in the earnings particularly occurred at a time when it actually added sufficient capacity, which invariably so required a lot of resources, particularly because of operating costs and higher additional human capital to be able to meet our obligations requirements, particularly with regard to some of the main activities or core activities in the airport, such as security, safety, and those have actually had an impact on our costs as well. But nevertheless, our EBITDA increased by 5%. Capital expenditure, I'll touch on later on in the presentation, to give you an overview of the major of the I've already indicated that the type of passengers went down by 2%. The key thing that we just wanted to highlight on that is that you see that that is mainly driven by interaction in terms of international as well as domestic, but the regional traffic, which means the African continent, continues to grow, and that's an area that we're starting to focus on as well as to move forward. And it's not necessarily only growing in terms of traffic, it's one of the areas that could be significantly from an economic perspective in terms of our spending and their spending as well as our airports. So that's an area that we want to focus on as we move forward. Going to slide 10, we talk to capital expenditure. In light of what you've seen in terms of the last 3 years for us have been quite significant, because we've almost spent around 5.5% on an average in terms of capital expenditure per annum. And most of that, as you recall, during our initial presentation in terms of our plan, was actually mainly spent at Kinshasa. By the end of March 2010, we spent approximately 6.6 billion. That was just 2 months before the opening of the airport, which has cost us just below 2.8 million in total. Our Tambo International Airport in total is a magnificent improvement, which actually matches with global standards, was actually spent at approximately 2.3 million. And we've actually continued to do analysis in terms of comparing our spending to our peers international. And if you look at the improvements that are also the world comparable in terms of the actual spend per capacity. Cape Town International Airport, the improvements including the traffic, we've also in total spent approximately 1.6 billion. Of the three spending base, the ones that were open were Tambo as well as Cape Town International Airport. As a result of that, our revenue has already increased, that we have increased by 12%. Some of the revenue, half of our revenue you'll see from the slide on 11, 53% comes from the aeronautical, which is a unregulated revenue. That mainly both relates to commercial activities, such as retail. Some of you have been talking a lot, you've seen that it's actually adding capacity in terms of our retail space at our airport. That contributes significantly to basically cross-subsidization of tariffs, but also in terms of value creation and as well as community development. It actually creates a lot of job opportunities in terms of shops and activities that we have at our airport. The A vertical aspect is also grown by 36%, and that is mainly relating to the increase in tariff services for the people of Tanzania of 18.5% and 1.25% is that in salaries. I've already touched a lot on some of the sensitive pieces that I need to just highlight on this slide, but in line with the capital cycle that I've indicated, this is where we spent approximately 12.2 billion in total by end of March 2010. We've already spent 2 billion for the last 2 years in terms of capital financing. You'll see that on that slide. As a result of it, because as I mentioned earlier on, Cape Town as well as our town was already open, our depreciation has increased significantly by 60% from 749 million to 1.1 billion the following year. This year, as you see, that increase moved to approximately 1.5 billion once the increase in charge as well, which is a significant amount. And as you can see from that, we get into a stage where basically depreciation is half of our revenue that we're generating. And that you can see that is actually not sustainable. Even worse, that the net finance cost, the increase from 379 million to 383 million, and that is after capitalization of 40% of that. If you didn't capitalize interest, we would have had an increase of 1.2 billion. And between the interest as well as the depreciation, basically those constitute about 50% of our total revenue. And that tends to have to explain that economic regulation is a key driver for business and it is involved. So it's like the true cost of the investment that we having said that, you can see that ideally we should be looking at about 45 to 50%. So if the community has a part of our business is not always like this, provide them with the first time that they came that day. We thought it would be appropriate to share with you the drivers, if you can imagine this is what I was highlighting, that over time, as and when we're investing, we're borrowing back. On the other hand, our credits have remained low in nominal terms, in terms of the city inflation that we're trying to achieve. When we started our capital expansion program in 2006, beginning of 2007, our tariffs went down by 15% from 35 cents from the and started increasing marginally 32 cents, now sitting at 43 rand end of March 2010. With the 33% increase we had for this year, especially sitting at around 57 rand. While on the other hand, as I've indicated, from 2007, as you can see on the slide, our investments have actually increased from 9.6 billion to 26 billion. So it actually shows where the constraints are coming from. But over time, the business has grown significantly, but the credit as well as the quality that determines how we should extend and cover our returns has remained behind the business. And we do believe that when benchmarks are down, which is the food content and prices to the financial norm, ensure that we don't impact the economic development. Our prices are way below all our countries. We actually the fourth cheapest in the country. We follow three countries that are basically subsidized by government. Why we do not have any reserve of government in the country. With that, I'm going to answer my question today.
By way of a wrap up, and thank you very much, Priscilla. I think the issue that Priscilla was just trying to highlight, all of our messaging, that with the improvements that we have made across the country, with the and where you know that the people that fly are the people with disposable income, it's amazing that my husband, whenever he has to go home at the end of the month, and the cost of over 200 restaurants to go home and come back. But for us, the disposable income that fly, we're still expecting a chance for the taxpayer subsidy to be able to pay 42 rand to fly domestically for the infrastructure we have. It's almost criminal, because what it means is that because it's an SOE and the shareholders government, we are therefore saying that the citizenry must carry us. And I think that underlying the number is actually a principle like that. We actually are flying fantastic infrastructure and we are paying less than 100 rand. And it's amazing because an ordinary person going to work every day pays a lot of money. And it's an issue that I think that if we get better at managing it, will make it better for us to be able to add even better value to all of you. The future really, we have no choice but to continue focusing on the issues of sustainability. We can also improve and continue to improve as a company. It is of business excellence, making sure that we are even more efficient, that our partnerships with airlines are more efficient, that we use more information technology, and that we, importantly, to you as Parliament, I think as a country, because we are such a small economy, it's important that with this new infrastructure and the technology that ATL has provided, that we begin to think through a future traffic growth strategy that we look at the best way that we do not only grow traffic and get bigger and better airlines, but that we can make sure that we can utilize the infrastructure that we have built for you. That is the future. We will continue to focus, we'll continue to look at our people and to train them for the future. But we have built a base for South Africa into the future. We won't be building for a very long time. We'll all miss the dust and the craters and all of the work that you see at airport, because we'll be spending more time thinking about how to utilize those assets for value. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for the presentation by William. Can we move then to a presentation by the Road Accident Fund?
I won't go through all the sections in detail. So on the cover, you'll see we describe basically our business socio-economic role, which is mainly to reintegrate victims of accidents back into society from a health and economic point of view, but also to protect the wrongdoers. We've got an ownership structure there. It's important to realize that you will not find a shared capital, for instance, in the rotation fund, because we are not registered in terms of the company sector. We an entity established by statute. So we actually own by the Sarawakan public. And from a governance point of view, clearly we report to the Ministry of Transport and to you as a portfolio committee and parliament. And on page one there, there's a mission and values. Mission, vision and values. This is what drives staff members. What does the organization on a day-to-day basis? You'll see we get our staff to care about and support others and freedom to succeed. And those are some of the beliefs that we develop organizational. Now, this is a turnaround strategy on page two. We've got three elements to it. And I think over the years we've indicated that the turnaround of the area, we as management and the board cannot do alone. We need the support for this committee and parliament on the legislative framework, because the business model of the rotation fund is encoded in legislation. So to the extent that there are systematic problems, to the extent that there are weaknesses in the system that we are administering, a lot of the changes have to occur through legislation. And secondly, a big role player for the rotation fund is also National Treasury. Now, National Treasury actually sets out all the funding that we require. We have developed for them a revenue requirement model to help them set every year the fuel levy at an appropriate level. Now, you'll see when you go to the financial statement that they are not using the revenue requirement model fully as we wanting them to do. And this is one of the reasons why we actually have a matter of emphasis relating to sheriff and interest costs in the AG's report. And we actually still are undercapitalized and insolvent. Note number three is just some of the highlights. How our revenue has grown, and obviously the red ones, although they look like low lights, they're also driven by what's happening operationally within the rotation fund. For instance, I think provision it has grown, but only 3%. We haven't received any growth in cash. Therefore, the number of claims that we process has had to reduce. Our backlog has dropped. Despite this, we reduced our backlog from just under half a million to about 200,000, 210,000. You'll see the numbers in a few minutes' time. Cost-to-income ratio has stabilized. Our cash holdings, you'll see it dropped to about 615 billion rand. This is because we had, for us to go pay the additional claims, to keep the same payment exactly the same as the way last year, we had to dip into our cash resources. And you'll also see it in a few minutes' time. And then we'll talk about the provision for selling claims, why it's increasing. But we also had a few successes. We had one court application against the Law Society on the mainland. And a few constitutional challenges that we have won. With the Amendment Act, it's sitting at the Constitutional Court. We're hoping the Constitutional Court will make the determination around March next year. But we have some successes. But we're also rolling out the new operating model. Now, we'll explain what the new operating model is. This is not just systems and computers. This is the rotation fund. It could be service delivery, getting through to the corruption public. It involves improving our footprint. We are now closing some of the offices that were just set up in, I think, in the towns and cities and far away from where the South African public is. We're setting up offices in hospitals, whether it's Baragwanath Hospital or Natal Space. This is where the people are. We're actually getting people to start learning in their own language. Now, this is the beginning of the rollout of the new operating model. We mustn't confuse it with a computer system. Elements of it is a computer system where we are designing a paperless computer environment to allow for processing of claims. And it's a sort of setup where that can work, you know, whether we have a fault-based system or a non-fault system. Even if we have an NHI or whatever may be in the pipeline, the systems we're going to take for that. Now, page 6 and 7, this is where we start providing a lot of historical information. I know some of the honorable members have used parliamentary questions to the minister and the document, and some of it requires a little bit of history, so we're providing on page 6 and 7 a 10-year review of a financial position, and 8 and 9 is the financial performance. And we put in a lot of operational data, but they have to be highlight some of our performances just on the 10-year review on page 6 and 7. On the statement financial perform position, that one policy indicator is the assets that the rotation fund owns and its liabilities, and this is where we determine whether we technically insolvent or not. And this is an area that the AG comments on in his report. I think the items you highlight is a few. And you'll see that our current assets are sitting at 3.5 billion. If you look at where they were, I mean, in 2001, where they were 359 billion, the bulk of it is actually money, the 2.75 billion. But we're talking the column that is covered in, let's say, 31st March 2010. The bulk of the cash is money that's owed to us by a receiver of revenue of 2.75 billion. Now, the reason the receiver of revenue owes us that money is that when the fuel levy is collected from the refineries, the refineries are giving something like 2 months to pay into the treasury. A bank account, and then start goes and do their own calculation to reduce to be that fuel diesel rebate, and diesel rebate just for the benefit of the committee is the amount that are petrol that is used by farmers and those sort of people that is not actually used in the driving of motor vehicles. So it takes about 2.5 months before we receive that money. You see that figure has been increasing substantially over the years. I mean, from just under 200 million to 2.7 billion in this financial year. But the REF owns very little assets. Under non-current assets, we only own one building, and that's our head office in Melbourne. Now, if you look at our total assets, they're sitting at 3.8 billion. So the figure that is total assets 3.878 billion. Now, if you compare that to our liabilities, right at the bottom says 46.8 billion. Now, this is where this technical insolvency comes in. But I think it's important to understand what the makeup of those liabilities are. We split them in sections. Current liabilities are people that credit card that you need to pay immediately. But in it, if you go the second line before the bottom of current liabilities, you'll see that there's a figure of 9.9 billion of provision for outstanding claims. This is the current portion of provision for outstanding claims. In fact, you need to add that figure to the 35.4 billion in the non-current liabilities to get the total Now, this provision for the implant is a figure that's determined by the actual is every year. And it seeks to measure claims that are still in the pipeline that we haven't processed yet. The amount it's going to cost us to settle them, that's number one. But what it also does is it looks at accidents that have already happened, for which claims have not been processed to the RAF yet. They come up with a figure of, you'll see, just under 45 billion for this financial year. Now, if you compare our current assets and to our current liabilities, you'll see that we're not only technically insolvent, we are illiquid. But we're only illiquid if you include the provision for outstanding claims. So in reality, if you actually take out the provision for outstanding claims, our liquidity position should improve a little bit. It doesn't mean, though, that we do not, as an RAF, take action we don't have a cash flow problem. We do suffer a cash flow problem. What it means, though, is the only way we are addressing this, the only way we are addressing this big shortfall is by simply not processing the volume of claims that we should be processing. And this is unfair to the South African public because we have an ability, we have the resources, and in fact, we pay about R1 billion a month. We were expecting to pay much more than that, anything, R1.5 billion and more. But we're not able to do so because the fuel levy is not sufficient to allow us to do that. So that's basically where the insolvency is coming in, and why we are said to be technically insolvent and the error that the AG addresses in the financial statement. If you go to page 8 to 9, you'll see that the statement financial performance. Now, this one reflects our revenues and expenditures and those sort of items that we as a Rotary Fund have spent in the current financial year. Once again, if you look at the 31st of March 2010, you'll see that our net fuel levies were 12.6 billion rand. Now, in this year, in fact, if you compare it to last year, fuel levy has increased from 8.845 billion to 12.6 billion, mainly because we had a 17.5% increase in fuel levy in the past financial year. It's important to note, though, that although National Treasury did give us 13.5 cents, our fuel levy determination model was looking for more. In fact, it said we needed about 38 cents increase. So what National Treasury is doing is it's not providing us with sufficient, the increase was not sufficient for us to improve on the processing of claims. And that's because, in fact, if you look at our total revenue, it only increased marginally from last year to this year, at 12.6 billion. Last year it was 11.9 billion, so it only increased by around 600 million. But also last year we had a 2.5 billion injection from government. Again, we made another cash. So that's why our revenue has not increased compared to last year. Now, our expenditure, the total expenses are sitting at 13.3 billion compared to 11.9 billion. You'll see the second excess total expenditure and it's broken down right at the bottom there. More than 90% of the fuel levy that you receive, more than 90% of the fuel levy we spend on claims expenditure. Over 90%, in fact, it's about 93%. What we spend in operational costs such as employee costs is actually less than 5%. You'll see employee costs at around 600 million. It's less than 5% of the fuel levy that we receive. Well, it's less than 5% of the amount of money that we spend. And administrative costs are only 2.6%. Now, although the those employee costs and administration costs are small in proportion to the amount of money that is spending in claims, there is no denying, though, that we still have a lot of problems in the claims expenditure. There's a huge systemic inefficiency in there. The bulk of that $11.3 billion that we paid last year did not go to excellent victims, and you'll see in the next page where it went to. Most of it has gone to pay legal fees, contingency fees, and those are some of the challenges that we're facing that require us of intervention as a parliament to deal with. So we're still not happy with the fact that $11.3 billion is not all going to accident victims. It's actually not achieving our social objective. Now this figure has increased, has not increased from last year. You'll see last year it was $11.1 billion. This year is $11.4 billion. That's because in reality the few that the increase that we received from government was not sufficient to cover claims expenditure. And you can look at the trend and say, where did we come from? 2001, you were only paying $2.5 billion in claims. I mean, you look at 2005, when the new board, the previous board was coming in, we were only paying $3.8 billion. Now, we've been able to achieve this efficiency without significant increases in subcontinent, and you'll see in a little while. But there's another factor that I think is important to note is in the provision for outstanding claims, the increase is now leveling up. There's a figure right at the bottom there, before that, it's a figure of $2.8 billion. And you compare to how it increased last year by $12 billion, you'll see that the increase in the provision for outstanding claims is leveling up. There's a number of reasons for this. Part of it being the amendment coming in. There's certain elements of claims that are impacted by the amendment act. One of them is general damages. You'll see that general damages are leveling out. They're not showing a decrease yet, because we're still processing a little bit of the backlog, but they're leveling out significantly. So we're seeing a leveling out of the increase in the provision for outstanding claims, but that's the figure that we want to see decreasing over time, and we expect the claims provision to decrease over time. Our cash flow statement just indicates exactly what I was saying a little earlier, that in fact, we actually had to dig into our cash resources, last year's cash, just to increase the payment of claims. So you see cash from operating activities dropped by $300 million, and then we invested about $122 million. But most of the cash, compared to the $1 billion at the beginning of the financial year, meant that our cash has declined. Now, this is not the ideal position we'd like to be in. I think in a normal company, we'd like to be able to cover at least 2 months' worth of claims. Now, we're not even covering 1 month's worth of claims in cash. So the cash figure should be, at a minimum, around $2 billion. But I think as a board and management, we said we're going to focus on obviously ensuring that excellent victims get their claims processed as quickly as they can. And even if these numbers don't look as good as they should be. And just on the next page 10 and 11, that gives you that information on how the ratios are working. And in fact, under liquidity there, you'll see that the figure that we put, that says net working capital excluding claims provision of $2.7 billion. You can see how it operated over the years. And perhaps it's important to extend this, because you know, you'll see the AG has not qualified our annual financial statement. And we also go in front of our financial statement on the basis that we are a going concern. Despite the fact that we are technically insolvent and we are elected. Now, there's two reasons for this. And we need to distinguish from technical insolvency and operational insolvency. Operationally, we are, there's an expectation that we have, as an entity owned by government, that we have government guarantee behind us, which doesn't remove the fact that we're sitting in the hall, and because it's a country hall in this deficit. And so I think that's the first thing. But secondly, we actually just simply stop processing claims. And we have access to a section of the REF Act, Section 21, that says that should we actually run out of money, we just implement Section 21 and say, to exit Section 21, I'm able to pay you. If I'm able to pay you, that means you go and recoup your money from accident, from other accident victims. From the wrongdoer. And that for us is the last resort. And something that we wouldn't like to look at. Now I'm conscious of time, but I think that actually shows our financial performance. It's 12 and 13, and by the way, most of the information is repeated in the details. So you'll see that I won't go the rest of the financial statement I won't go in as much detail. Page 12 and 13 gives you figures on our operational performance. It figures going all the way back to 2004. I think it's important to note how, as a board, we have performed as a rotating fund. And perhaps if you focus on claims outstanding, because this is the backlog that we talk about, and you compare it, if you look at it from 2004, it was sitting at 347 million, I think 347,000 of selling claims. It grew all the way to 2025. It's going to come all the way down to 209,000 of selling claims. What we also do is show you where we spend the money. I think this page is important to highlight some of the challenges that we're facing as a rotation fund. Two things. If National Treasury doesn't give us cash, it doesn't mean, though, that we're able to process the same level of claims that we've processed before. Because hospital groups will still come to us and say, we have increases in our medical costs. And a lot of income, people will still get salary increases. So if the skill level stays the same, you'll see that the rent value that we pay for claims still goes up, which means that for the same money we process a little less claims than we should have processed. So I think that's the first thing, just on that page. But the second thing that I think I'd like to highlight is general damages. This is under the heading that says payments ahead of damage. You'll see that over the last, since 2004, it's been increasing from 1.5 billion. It peaked at 1.449 billion in the previous financial year. And this year, it's now leveling out at 4.8 billion. So that's the impact of the amendment. But the next thing that I'd like to highlight just on that page is how much money we spend. Of the 11 billion, how much we spend on what our social objectives should be. We spend only 700 million. That's the figure that says medical expense. That's if you go down the line. We only spend 700 million. 700 million out of 11 billion on medical costs. And if you compare that to claimants' legal costs, which are the last two items at the bottom there, we spend more in legal fees than we spend in medical expenses. So it shows that we have systemic problems in the rotation fund. Now, most of this information is already repeated. Page 14 and 15 so that it indicates that I will not satisfy. Page 18 and 19 is that the chairman and the CEO's report, which explains some of the successes and some of the challenges that we face. And if you want to go through this in any detail, other than to indicate that some of the stuff that I've mentioned already in there. Now, I'd like us to then turn to the next section, which is organizational leadership. This is just the board members and their qualifications, and also is executive management on page 32. I think, you know, we've got an organization that is actually run by professionals. You'll see you've got chartered accountants with MBAs and all those sort of stuff. And I think it's fortunate to have a team of this kind of running the area. Just on the governance section, on section 4, just two things to highlight. We now have a new board. The previous board had, in fact, occupied two sets of terms. 1 year was they completed the term of the board that the previous minister had dismissed. They had their own 3 year term, but they also had a year of as advisory committee. So they had been again in total 5 years. But now we had a new board that started recently. And on page 44 and 45, you'll see the dedication of the board. I mean, a lot of them have attended most of the meetings, and you can see that they really have spent time on the governance of the organization, in attendance to meetings and that. So we haven't had a complaint with regards to that. So that's on the governance side. Legal framework, we do comment on all the constitutional challenges. We say everything that anybody wants to know about how the training in the IDF works and the limitations and the changes that apply to post 2008 Amendment Act on page 59 are covered in there. Now, the operational review explains in detail all those of the 10-year review that I spoke about and the challenges that I spoke about, you know, cost to compensation ratios, and we show them in graphs. So that section, the customer services network, which is on section 7, on page 100, describes elements of the new operating model. What we're doing to roll out in all the provinces. And if you go to page 100, you'll see that we already have 65 customer services points. You know, we're looking at customer services centers, working centers, and centralized processing of claims. Now, so that's what I'd like to just highlight in this section. And if you go to section 8, performance against objectives, these are the targets that the minister has set and sets annually with the board. You'll see that they are linked with government's own objectives. The Department of Transport's own objectives in terms of the management of transport costs, infrastructure development, and it includes some detailed financial targets, the deficit, and that sort of thing. And under the comment there, we indicate what has been achieved and what has not been achieved. For instance, the rollout of the performance management system on page 115 was not achieved. But this, again, is audited by the Auditor General, annually. And then we've got a section of sustainability report. The one thing I'd just like to highlight in the sustainability report is that our EES, employment equity on page 133. You'll see that graph on page 133 reflects the number of staff members in the Rotterdam Fund. we have about 1,960 subcontinents, and 1,400 of them are African, majority being female. You know, and then colors having 176, Indians 121. So in fact, we are very close to the demographics of the country in terms of our subcontinent, and both male and female. And then just on the annual report itself, on page 143, there's a report by the Auditor General. You will see that we have a clean audit opinion. The opinion on page is on page 144. And in fact, we've had a clean audit opinion for a number of years. This section that says the opinion just indicates that they are satisfied with the government of the organization. And those two items of emphasis of matter, you see the AD says he's not actually altering his opinion, but he just needs this to be, two items to be brought to the attention of, I think these are the financial statements. And one of them being going concern, and you know, I've touched a little bit on it on section 31 of the Act, and technical basis of rationale insolvency, but also fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You know, every time we're unable to pay claims, unfortunately, we have, I think, the legal fraternity that just doesn't quite understand why we may not have cash and that sort of thing. And why they do is they, you know, they issue summonses, we go to court, and they force us to pay. We actually have writs that are issued against the Road Accident Fund. And invariably, we incur sheriff and interest costs. And that's the sort of problem that we face, I think, systemically from the area committee. But other than those two items, this is the same for each opinion. And then the annual financial statements themselves, I've already touched on them when we looked at the 10-year review. The balance sheet is only 164 to 165. And most of the figures are described in the notes to the financial statement. You'll see that there are notes that are attached to the financial statement that explain all the items in the financial statement. I know I've got 1 minute left, 2 minutes left in your timing, Madam Chair. But perhaps if I can just highlight one or two items, I think if we're able to deal with them before you know, question session, it may actually answer some of the questions that may arise at a later stage. If you go to note three on one page, if you're page to the note, but the figures are in the balance. If you go to page 182, just quickly running through the notes and saying one or two that I can think of, you'll see that, for instance, cash, we put most of our cash on core deposits, and that's $665 million compared to $1 billion last year. And note four is just the amount of money that was to us tax. And page 183, you'll see that items that said other receivables. You know, we've got 18 million that's owed to us by ASBC, and that's just one of the supplier payments that in fact was paying on behalf of particularly the provincial government in Cape Town. You know, the bill was about 18 million. We have a director's indemnity policy of 52 million, and about 72 million arising out of, in fact, the problems that we have in our system. So we're changing some of the systems, and ever so often we do have some set payments. If you go to page 184, you'll see that we have spent in our properties and equipment we've added the column that's in the middle of the section there, about 77 million in property. A lot of it is obviously computer systems, 44 million, and then some of it is just furniture and resource improvements. And then we then go to page 185. Intangible assets, we've been investing in senior solutions, and those are the IT systems that we're talking about, which added about 44 million. So in total, on IT equipment alone, it's 39 million. Equipment being 44, and then software being 35 million. And obviously, this page that we always get questions on, and this is because salaries increase normally, and you'll see that this is on the 10th, that it hasn't increased substantially compared to last year. And although we have a provision for performance bonuses of 38 million, we've actually only paid for 34 million out of that provision. Note 11 is just the some of our spending liabilities. We've utilized on note 12 there all the government grant that we received in the previous financial year. So the 2.5 billion that we received last year, we actually used to pay back. And this is on note 12 there, so it's all gone. And the rest of the notes in fact just reflect how the provision is calculated, and you can deal with it in detail at some point in time. So perhaps, Madam Chair, I can just stop there, and then we'll take questions at a later stage. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have a short break. 10 minutes.